Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, Orlando. My name is Josh, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs podcast show, where I talk with Orlando entrepreneurs, and I hear their story, I share their successes, I highlight them, lift them up, and bring great people together. So on the show today, we're going to interview Cassandra Plas. She is the owner and head cookie maker of Hazelic Cookies. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did pronounce that correctly. That was good. Not everybody can say that right.
Awesome. Well, Cassandra, welcome to Orlando Entrepreneurs Show.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah. So as we're talking about the pronunciation of the name of your cookie company, how do you spell it so people could like picture this in their head? And then how do you pronounce it?
Okay, so Hazelic is spelled with a G. So it's G-E-Z-E-L-L-I-G. So here it looks like it says gezellig, but it's a Dutch word. And in Dutch, that G, instead of it being a G, it's a H, like an H. You have to cough up a little bit there. So it's gezellig. And okay, just so to give you a little, sorry, go ahead.
No. I want to hear the background of this because this is a very unique name. I practiced pronouncing it all day and I probably butchered it. So I do want to know the origins of the word.
Well, and it's fair because a lot of people sort of get the deer in headlights look when they look at it, like, I don't know what to do with that. So gezellig is a Dutch word. So we make Dutch style cookies. And what gezellig means, and if you go to the Netherlands and you know no other word, this is the word you want to know, because it's a feeling of cozy. So if you think about being with people you like and the food's good and the atmosphere is cool and you have that kind of warm and fuzzy feeling inside, that's what gezellig means. And so in the Netherlands, you will hear people talk and everything is very gezellig or very ongezellig, like it's not very good. And so it's really about that kind of warm and fuzzy feeling. And so it's a pretty important word in Dutch. And I just, there's no word in English that quite encapsulates that. So since we make Dutch cookies and that's what we want you to feel when you enjoy these cookies, that's the word we chose.
So in the Netherlands, the word for cozy is gezellig, kind of like that coughing feeling.
And exactly.
That means warm, cozy, welcoming. It's something that you would enjoy with your friends, your family. It brings people together, right?
Exactly. You got it.
Okay. So how did you become the head cookie maker, and how did you choose that name? How did you start this company? We want to know all about you, Cassandra.
So it's funny. It's certainly not an industry I ever thought I'd work in. I went to school for fashion design. I started off in that industry, switched into banking and a few other things. But I grew up, my dad was born in the Netherlands. And so I was born in Canada and I grew up in Canada, but we grew up with my dad's side of the family. We celebrated Dutch culture. And a big way that we celebrated that was through food. And so when I went to my grandparents' house, my oma and opas, so I will step back and say, my grandparents never bought a loaf of bread in their life. My oma baked every loaf of bread anyone's ever eaten in their house. So she always had the cookie tin, and in the cookie tin, there were always one of a couple different cookies. And one of the cookies that she used to make is a cookie called a knipperdy. And what that is that people sometimes look at our cookies and they think of pizzelles. And so it's made in an iron like that, but it's super, super paper thin and it's rolled like a cigar. So it's all really thin, crisp layers with lemon zest and vanilla and cinnamon. And I mean, I've eaten my weight in these cookies many times over growing up. And my aunts would try to make them and my dad still makes them. And this is just something that everybody's into making. But it's very hard to get an iron in the US or in Canada that's thin enough to make these cookies. Everything makes them way too thick. And so it's always this big thing. Who can find an iron? Like, where can I get an iron to do these? So we had moved around the U.S. quite a bit. And I like to cook and I love to bake and I love doing that for people. And we were living in L.A. and I was on a mission, and I did this every like November, December. Like, I'm going to find an iron this year and I'm going to bake these cookies. So I go looking online and I found a company that said they make these irons, and it said, like, quote, good for Dutch cookies. And in my mind, I'm thinking they want to make knipperties, which is also very regional Dutch, and not even all Dutch people know what these things are. But I decide this company in Philly is obviously making this iron that I want. So I order this iron, the iron shows up, I try to make it, and for knipperties, it's like a batter, it's like pancake batter. So the iron, totally the wrong thing, it just makes a big mess, it's way too thick. Like, I didn't know what happened, but obviously this isn't what they make. And that night I couldn't even sleep. I was like, what did I buy? What is this thing for? And then I realized the iron I bought was for making stove waffles, which are caramel-filled waffle cookies, which are quite a bit different. So now I owned an iron, and now I had to figure out how to make stove waffles. So meanwhile, my husband worked for a Dutch company, and what's very traditional in the Netherlands is when it's your birthday, you don't bring in the cookies, or you don't bring in, or sorry, people don't bring you in cookies or a cake, you do it. So it's my birthday, I bring in treats for everybody. And so my husband's birthday is close to Christmas, and so I would make cookies and he would take them in. And every year that box got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I started taste testing on coworkers, and I would make people fill out forms. Do you like A better or B? And this was just for fun. And meanwhile, we moved to Delaware and LA and back to Delaware and everywhere else. And finally in 2012, we decided, we lived in Florida at one point and decided to move back to Florida. We had a lot of friends here. We thought, let's go back to Florida. So we moved back to Florida, and that was at the point where I was looking at what was I going to do next. And I've always wanted to start my own business. And the cookies just became this natural thing, right? And so it was just something that there were cookies I grew up and I loved, and they remind me of my grandparents, and just these other ones that I developed on my own and started to play around with and doing my research. It just seemed like for some reason, this was the thing that I was going to start a business with.
Wow. So you were doing fashion. You went to school for fashion design over in LA, and then you went on, you bought an iron. Now, we're not talking about like a clothes iron. We're talking about a cookie making iron, right?
Exactly. Yep. So if you think of like a waffle iron, but very thin.
Okay. Is it like huge, or is it like, you know, could it sit on a counter?
Yeah. It's small. It can fit on a counter. So the original iron that I bought isn't much bigger than, if you think of like a waffle iron that makes two or four little waffles at a time, it's like that size, the original one I bought.
Got it. So you're in fashion design, going to school for that. You guys are living out on the West Coast. You bought this because you wanted to remind you, do you call her Oma?
Oma, yeah.
Okay, so dear Oma, you were trying to, eat some cookies that she used to make, and you were missing family, so you bought an iron, mm-hmm. and you tried to make it, but you bought the wrong iron. So you had to switch your cookie plans to something, a different type of cookie, right?
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then you guys moved all over the United States and landed here in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Now, why did you choose Orlando, Florida?
So back many, many years ago, we were living in Toronto. So I'm sorry, we've moved around a lot. So we were living in Toronto. And when I switched out of the fashion industry, I switched to banking. And there was a bank in Canada, CIBC. And they were starting to do what's called white label banking in the U.S., which means essentially they were working with grocery stores. And instead of you getting a CIBC bank card, what you would get is something with a grocery store. And so this had worked well in Canada, and they were going to do it in the U.S. And so I actually came down to Florida to work for that bank. And that's how I originally ended up here. And it's funny because I would have said, if you'd asked me 20 years ago, like, I wouldn't live in Florida. Why would I live in Florida, right? You think of it as it's just Disney and tourists and whatever. Why would I go there? And so I moved down here 18 years ago and made a ton of great friends. And my in-laws were down here as well. And they loved it and we loved it. And they went back to Canada and we moved to Delaware. But we ended up buying a place here that they would use as snowbirds. So they would come down, and we had so many friends that we just came down all the time anyway as well. So we it's almost like we became Floridians by accident, but we just loved it here and we were just always back. And so in 2013, the end of 2012, we decided, let's move back to Florida. So we decided to move back to Orlando.
Wow. Yes. This sounds like an entrepreneurial family. Absolutely. So here in Florida, what you started doing, you know, you started making cookies for your husband's job mm-hmm. for his birthday. Cause it's weird. Yeah. You guys had to bring your own cookies in.
Yeah.
The demand for your cookies grew and grew, and you were doing this as a hobby, but mm-hmm. you were doing it pretty smart by asking people what they like, doing surveys back and forth. At what point did it get to where you were doing all these cookies and you decided one day to maybe make a business of this?
So what happened is when we moved down here from Delaware, I continued to work for the company I was working for in Wilmington and worked remotely for a year and a half. And as that was winding down, I was interviewing for jobs here. And there's always been a part of me that wanted to start my own business. But I'm probably not one of those people that has 10,000 different ideas of things to try. And so I always thought it would be more fashion business related. I have business plans in my head, but I'm a bit of a planner. So I've had some of that and I was thinking about some of those ideas, but I was always a little afraid to pull the trigger, like when's the right time and do I want to do it and, you know, hemmed and hawed. But, you know, as I was interviewing, I started to think, you know, I always said I was going to do this and it felt a bit like it's now or never. And then really looking at how the cookies were going and the reactions I got from people. And then I just started to research, like, will people eat these cookies? It's certainly not a style of cookie most people have heard of in the U.S. It's weird. No one knows how to pronounce the cookie or pronounce like any of this. Like, will anyone buy them? As I started to research, I realized that for soap waffles, the caramel-filled waffle cookies, that while there are not a lot of manufacturers out there, I could see that there was starting to be a push in the U.S. to take this iconic Dutch cookie that people in the Netherlands go bananas for and actually start to really push it in the US. Like, they've always been here, but no one knows they're here unless they really go looking for them. And so it felt like, it just seemed like based on what I was researching and what we were doing, that there might be something smart in there and this might actually be the right thing to start as a business. So something just felt like it clicked and it made sense, and this was the thing we were ready to, you know, jump in and take the plunge with.
So you're kind of kicking around the idea between doing something in fashion or these cookies. Now, mm-hmm. let's just say you were going to do fashion. What did you do in the fashion world? Like, what kind of adventures did you have, or what kind of business did you have in mind? I see a smile. Okay, good. We're on to something.
So I actually went to school in Syracuse, and when I worked in the fashion industry, I worked for a couple of different companies. I did a few different things. I worked, I did some customer service and then I did sales. Sales is not totally my thing, but I do love products and I love understanding how things work. And I don't sell things well if I don't believe in the product, but if I like the product, I can get very excited about it. And so I originally worked for a company that did swimwear and hosiery. And we did these, like, our swimwear was really well made. And so I would go around and do demos and sell swimwear. That was fine. But then I worked for another company where I did, for Club Monaco, and I did production for women's casual knits and sweaters. And it's a crazy industry to work in, and all the stories are true. It can be very tough, but there's a lot I learned, good and bad, working in that industry, especially in my last role. It's the industry I always wanted to work in, but at the same time, when the opportunity came to switch to banking, it was also a really good change for me, and it's something that I'm really, really glad I did. And then I guess to answer your question, what I would have done or what I would do is it would be one of two things. One, I always did custom diaper bags for people for fun for the most part with custom embroidery. So I would do those. And then I have a whole business plan in my head for around a women's clothing line with pants that fit properly and clothes that fit properly. Because for anyone out there that knows anything about the fashion industry, the way men's clothes are made versus how women's clothes are made are very different. And it's a whole lot easier for men to walk into a store and buy a pair of pants and say, okay, I have a 34-inch waist and I have a 34-inch inseam and this is what I need for pants. And oh, by the way, I bought these dress pants and now they're a little too tight. So just adjust the waistband, make it a bit bigger or take it in. And that's really easy to do. Women's pants are not made that way. And women's clothing is made, is more expensive and it's made to be very disposable. So women get sucked into spending more for lesser quality. So it was around a whole business plan about, and it's still there, around building a better fitting product.
Nice.
So especially because I'm very tall, so it's impossible to find long enough pants half the time.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a very tall person, and I have a hard time finding pants that fit, so we might be onto something here.
All right, we can talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So you decided to go the cookie route, which mm-hmm. I'm glad because I got to have some of your samples and they're awesome.
Thank you.
So you start, at what year did you start this cookie company and what did it look like launching something from nothing?
We officially launched in May of 2015. So we're just coming up on 3 full years. And I spent about 8 months prior just planning and researching. And it's funny you ask that because I was talking to someone else yesterday that has their own business and how funny it is to look back, and even a year back seems like a million years ago in some ways. Like you look at what you've done and you're like, sometimes you step back and go, that's really cool that we did this. And then some things you're like, why did I do that? That was really stupid, right? Wouldn't do that again. So 3 years ago, I look at like our packaging, how certain things have changed, just a comfort level as well, talking to people about what we're doing or talking to customers about what our product is and maybe how we explain it, or how you take feedback, I think as well, is a little different. Initially, you want everyone to even though not everyone will like your product, doesn't matter what it is. Initially you take so much of it to heart that if someone doesn't like it, it's like, they just kicked your dog. Whereas, 3 years down the road, you can take it and you can say, okay, that's good constructive feedback. I'm listening to what this person is saying, or I'm hearing this and going, whatever, like, it doesn't matter what I do, you'll never buy it, or you want a price point I'll never be able to support, or certainly not in the near future, so I can't worry about that. And that's okay that you don't like it, and I'll move on and focus on the people that do.
Yeah, I agree with you. And there was something that you said that I thought was kind of funny. You said you launched the company in 2015, but you spent a year researching cookies. And mm-hmm. I think that's funny because if I told my wife, hey, babe, I'm going to take a year to eat cookies, and she was just thinking that I'm going to like sit there and, dunk Oreos in milk all day. So what did that research look like for you? And then you mentioned something really awesome. How to take feedback, because I think this is a sticking point for a lot of entrepreneurs. So I'd mm-hmm. love to learn from you.
So the first question, I did not spend 9 months dunking cookies in milk. I'm a bit of a research geek and an Excel junkie. So I like data. Like I learned how to build reports the last company I was with. Like I like to ask questions and answer questions. Like I love to dig through things. And so for me, it was very much like building a project plan. So it became, because a lot of it is, do I want to sell a product that anybody even cares about, right? So it was really looking into who are my competitors, who's out there, like who's making exactly the cookies I'm making, but then who's making other cookies somewhere in this space that while they might not be making stroh waffles and Dutch cookies, they're making something at a similar price point, or, I'm competing for shelf space with them, right? I'm competing for somebody's like $5. So who's out there? What am I looking at? And then what are people selling them for? Like, sure, I could charge $100 a box. That would be great. But is anyone going to spend that, right? So starting to look at what will ingredients cost me? Who are my suppliers going to be? It's an industry I don't understand. So where do I get ingredients from? Where do I bake? How do I get licenses? And it became this like one, I'm trying to understand on some level, who am I competing against and what do I want my brand to be and what do I want it to look like when somebody sees it on the shelf? And then how do I legally do all of this? So, and I used to work in the compliance industry as well. So I knew some people to talk to, and there were some things I understood on that side. But I really, since food is such a new industry for me, it was really understanding what permits do I need? Where should I bake? How do I find a commercial kitchen? And how much is this going to cost? Like how much, what's my, and that's one of the things too, is as much as I'm a numbers junkie, I reran some numbers recently and realized I had something totally wrong. And it was a bit of like, oh, okay, well, I guess let's, how do we accommodate that, right? Or someone raises a price on something, you're like, all right, can I, does that number still work? Because I think that's the other thing too, I've realized is people in general, like they're used to, like, I think as North Americans, we're pretty used to things being pretty inexpensive, right? Oreos are pretty inexpensive and we all want handmade, but sometimes we don't always understand what it costs to make handmade. So some of it is understanding what the real cost of it is. And then how do you also explain that to customers sometimes too? Like, why is my cookie $2, you know, versus 25 cents?
Yeah. So talk to us about the first time you received feedback and from like a non-family member or someone, and it was like really bad feedback, like or like really painful to you. I'm sorry to bring this up, like this is
no,
so painful.
Funny because it's a funny story now.
Okay, yeah. Well, we want to hear it.
So we're at the Winter Park Farmers Market. The very first day we're there, right? So I'm like all bright-eyed and ready to go, right? Bushy-tailed, yeah. So we got our little table and our little space, and I look at how our display was, and it was stupid. But we had our little dumb display, and I've got samples, and it's 7 o'clock in the morning, and this woman is walking by. And I ask her, would you like to try a sample? And so she takes a sample, she bites it, and she makes a face, and she goes, they're soggy. And walks away. And I was like, I thought I was going to be sick right there. So of course I grab a sample and I eat it, and it wasn't soggy. And it's like, I was confused. But the one thing that we learned out of that and out of some subsequent conversations is that because those cookies or the caramel filled waffle cookies are so thin, people assume naturally that they're going to be very crispy. They're not crispy, they're chewy. So I've learned from that is that I need to sometimes tell people, even though it's so thin, it's actually a chewy cookie. And then people bite it and they're going, oh, it's chewy, versus, ew, it's soggy or it's soft and I didn't think it would be soft. So that was like, I was crestfallen when she said that. I was like, what? What do you mean soggy?
So, oh, man, that little mean old lady, huh?
Some people, I tell you. But whatever, like she didn't have to be nice to me. She's not my, you know what I mean? She's not my friend. So that was, so we took that feedback. But I also didn't turn them into magically crispy either. So just learned how to explain them a little better.
Perfect. So over time, you learn to really take customer feedback to heart, and you actually sought out not just the, oh, your cookies are great, but you sought out the challenges, like what don't you like about my cookie, right?
Yep.
How did that shift in you, and what advice do you have for entrepreneurs out there when it comes to seeking feedback, real feedback, not grandma saying, not your Uma saying that these are great, like real feedback?
I think the thing is you do have to figure out a way to just take a step back and one, know it's okay that not everyone's going to like them because that's a fact of everything. Look, I think like you think who could hate a strawberry? My niece doesn't like strawberries, right? Like there are things that no one's going to like everything. It's impossible because you can't design things by committee, right? And you end up with a beige car. Nobody wants that. So I think one of it is you have to go out. At the end of the day, it all depends on if people are willing to spend a dollar on your product or $2 or whatever, right? So sometimes the best feedback, and I think that's where things like farmers markets or sampling where you sell when it comes to food is really important, because at the end of it all, even if sometimes people won't tell you to your face they don't like it, and you can sort of tell sometimes when they're like, eh, I don't really like this, but I'm not going to be mean. At the end of the day, did they buy your product or not, right? So you sort of look at how many samples am I giving out and how many people really buy it. And then from that, you know, sometimes people will be totally honest, like the lady, and tell me they're soggy and she doesn't like them. But sometimes there's subtler things, or sometimes people can give you really good, honest feedback about what they do and don't like. And then part of it is up to you to say, you know, 20% of people tell me they don't like, you know, they think the cookie is too sweet or it's not sweet enough. So what does that mean? Do I care about changing it for that 20%? Maybe I do and maybe I don't. But you can look and say, well, what's the consistent feedback I'm getting? And is there something that makes sense that I should change because I'm hearing something? Or, you know, is it something that, you know, probably whatever I do, they'll never buy it. Or if I change it to make that 20% happy, this 80% will no longer be happy. You know, and I think, like, for example, one other bit of feedback I got from someone that sells our cookies recently is he was telling me how, so our current packaging, which is changing soon, is our logo on the front, and then we have a sticker on the back that says, has the NutriPanel, so all the information about the ingredients and how many calories and everything. But there's not a lot of product information. And he was saying how, you know, if some of this were bigger on the front of the package, it would be an easier sell for me. And sometimes people say, oh, $2 for a cookie, like, that's a lot of money. But if you call it something different, like if you advertise that it's vegan on the front or advertise some of that, they're willing to pay a premium. So you might want to consider having that information on the front in bigger letters rather than on the back in smaller print, which I thought was, I've been thinking a lot about, especially as we're changing our packaging, and how do we get a little more information on that package out there when we're not standing in front of someone saying, here, try my product, buy my product, right? So how do you use that marketing language to speak for you when you're not there?
Wow. See, that's incredible feedback, because just throwing, there's a huge push right now for, you know, vegan foods and healthy mm-hmm. foods. So just saying that it's vegan, you could offer this for a premium because you're talking to a mm-hmm. very specific niche of people yep. who value that.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yeah, that's great feedback. So you started making cookies. You became the cookie master. Not the cookie monster, which I love the cookie monster. But you started making these cookies. And what was your first approach to the market? You went to farmer's market. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that experience and what was after that. How did you progress?
Yeah, so when we got into the Winter Park Farmer's Market, that's what we consider our official public launch date. So we started there at the end of May 3 years ago. And then we started our website a month later. Our website was up, so you could order off of our website. And then from there, we had worked on box packaging to put the cookies in. So the cookies are all, for people that don't know, the snow waffles are all individually wrapped. So they come in a box of 16. So each cookie's wrapped, you can use it as a grab and go. And then the box is designed so that it pops open so that if you're in a store, it could sit as a grab and go item. So you're not buying the whole box. You can grab one cookie and buy one cookie. But then online, you're buying a box or little packages of six. So we started farmers market and then online. And then as we got that box design done and the packaging done, I think it took us about 6 or 7 more months, we started approaching retail stores and started slowly getting them into some stores locally.
Wow. Okay. How do you get your cookie in a retail store? And where could people find some of your cookies? Give us an example of some retail stores.
So Ancient Olive, all the Ancient Olive stores in Florida. They have 4 stores now. We're available there. There's one in Winter Park in the Hidden Garden, which is an awesome store. If your listeners have not been there, it's really a great store, great staff. You can try anything. It's very cool. So Ancient Olive is one, and they're one of the first stores that carried us as well. It was definitely something I found difficult to go out and introduce myself. Hi, you don't know me. Please buy my cookies, sell my cookies. That was something that was difficult for me to do. But Ancient Olive was one right out of the gate. They've always been really great. And Swine and Sons is another. They have our cookies and our ice cream sandwiches. They're a wonderful, wonderful spot. They've been carrying our stuff. Lucky's in Orlando on Colonial. Lucky's carries them. And then all in, we're in about 26 stores in Central Florida. And then our vegan version is in a couple stores across the country.
Wow. So that's pretty cool. So Ancient Olive, did I say that right? Ancient Olive?
Yes. Ancient
okay.
Olive.
Cool. So that's the first place that you walked in. Mm-hmm. How did you approach them? We want to hear your pitch.
My pitch. I hope my pitch has gotten a little better. I think I generally walk in looking like a deer in headlights, like, oh, hi. I have cookies. But no. My pitch may not be a whole lot better, but essentially, we're a local business. We make Dutch style cookies. These are the cookies we make, and I always bring samples with me and just try to talk a little bit about what the cookies are. So, the one big thing is coffee shops were the thing I thought would be the big hit, because in the Netherlands, these are all cookies designed for coffee. You take slow waffles, you put it over your coffee or tea, the steam melts the caramel. This is how people eat them, right? Like, this is the thing. And I thought, and this is my business plan going in, coffee shops are the way to go. Coffee shops are going to love these because they're so perfect. Coffee shops don't really care about me. Coffee shops don't necessarily want to sell my cookies, right? So that was really hard. And I had a hard time trying to work with coffee shops for the most part. But it became like the thing where I had an easier in became stores like Ancient Olive, which again, they're just great, right? And someone else that was working with them, I met, she did an introduction for me. So that helped me a lot just to get through that initial, past that gatekeeper, and then to sit down and bring samples. And yeah, they were really easy to work with. And then the other funny thing for me are brewers are really fun. There's a really great network of brew pubs in Orlando, I'm sure a lot of people are aware of. And there's something about brewers that I think they like to experiment, they like to try things. So it's been really fun to work with some of them where we were getting spent grain from 1010. So they brew beer with our cookies, and then we've made cookies with spent grain, and that was really fun. Some of them carry our cookies and ice cream sandwiches, and they've been great. Like, it's just really easy with some of them around to just say, you know what, we'll just try and we'll see if people buy your product. Like, that's cool. Put them on the shelf and see what happens. Let's try the ice cream sandwiches. So that's been really good. And for me, once I get my foot in the door, it's very easy for me to want to collaborate and think about how do we promote this and, you know, what can I do to help and how do we make this very symbiotic, right? But sometimes it's just hard for me personally to get my foot in the door. But over the last 3 years, it's gotten a whole lot easier to have these conversations, especially as people start to recognize the brand or they recognize our car because it's wrapped. And that's made it a whole lot easier to have those conversations or to be introduced to someone versus just sort of walking in the door and cold calling.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk to us about the kind of people, because, I mean, these are a healthy-ish, food, right? So yep. Talk to us about the kind of people, like, who's your ideal client that really loves these, the end user?
So runners and cyclists will use them as fuel food, the throw bottle specifically. So there's definitely a base of runners that will buy them, and because they're individually wrapped. So it's easy to just take with you when you're going on a long run or to use post run. So runners for sure. And I would say, because it's not a product that people necessarily recognize, although that's changing a bit with some of the airlines that are carrying throw bottles, but it feels like it tends to skew a little younger. So I would say most of our customers are probably 25, 30 to 45, and tend to travel. So it tends to be people that have traveled, people that are willing to try new things, right? So like we did Science of Wine last week, which is just a great event. And it's always interesting because the samples are free, right? Like, I mean, you've paid to attend, so you can try whatever you like. And, there's still always people that are a little hesitant, like, I don't know what that is, so I'm not going to try it, even though it's essentially a cookie, right? So it always feels like it's people that are either they know what the style of cookie is and they're very excited to see it because they've been to Amsterdam or they've traveled before and they're aware of it, or they had it on their United flight, or it's people that are just willing to try new things. So you've got people who are just like to be adventurous. It's like, I don't know what that is, but I'm willing to give it a try. And sometimes those people are the most fun because it's like, listen, just tell me about what you've got here and I'll try it. And I love that because it's like, if you don't like it, you don't like it, but why wouldn't you try something?
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that you're like for people who travel and you're actually in an airport. You've got your product within an airport, so people could buy this and take it on the plane with them and travel with it. Mm-hmm. So if someone's going to Orlando International Airport, they could find your cookie, right?
They can. If you're flying through Terminal A and you go to Cask and Larder, we are in the grab-and-go section, which is very exciting. And if you haven't seen that space, it's very cool, so you should check it out if you're flying through Orlando.
Awesome. So let me ask you a question now. you're making cookies. Do you have a commercial kitchen that you cook in? Talk to us about your layout and your kitchen and your operations.
Yeah, so one of the things that's, for people that maybe aren't in the food industry or know how some of this works, is one of the things that's very cool that's been popping up really across the U.S., I guess probably over the last 5 to 10 years, are commissary kitchens, where it's fully licensed commercial kitchen, but rather than having to go, especially for when you're starting a new business, rather than having to go and build out your own kitchen and get all the permits to set up a kitchen, buy all the equipment, and maybe spend $50,000 to $100,000 to test out to see if your idea is any good, what you can do is there are kitchens like East End Market, if anyone's familiar with East End Market, you can actually be permitted to use their kitchen, and their kitchen, the kitchens are fully licensed. So you can go there and actually make your product. And so that's what we did. So when we initially started, we went and researched what kitchens like that were available, and it's growing all the time. But East End is what we chose to do. But it's great because, I mean, we use weird irons, and those we obviously have to provide ourselves, but they have refrigeration in their storage, and it's great because it's a really good way to get started and test your product and test it in a way that your product is fully, it's fully licensed. Because you can also work under the cottage laws, cottage industry laws, where you could use your home kitchen. But the problem with that is it's okay for the farmer's market. You can sell directly to consumer, but you can't sell online that way. You can't sell through stores. You're very limited in how you can sell your product. So we went that route, and that's been really good. So flip side, the challenge is you share it with a lot of other people, and you can't just have everything set up the way you want it, and you have to, you know, play nice. But I don't regret starting that way at all. It's worked out very well for us.
Have you ever started any kitchen fires or anything like that?
Not at East End, I haven't. As a kid, I have. Maybe as an adult once too, but not making cookies.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, I'm not a very good cook, but like the idea of like going to a place where there's other cooks around and like the shared cooking space, this sounds very cool. Do you, do any of your raving fans, the people who love your cookies, do they ever come in and watch you cook or participate?
So, sometimes we're a little hidden away, but one of the coolest was we were probably at East End maybe 3 months. So in all honesty, you know, I think we were still figuring a lot of things out, and I was downstairs by the double door. So if anyone's ever been there behind Lineage and Farm and House, there are double doors into the kitchen, and that's the commissary kitchen in the back. And so I was right in front of those double doors, and you can see in. And as I'm baking, and I look up, and there's a family just sort of watching me, right, as I'm making these cookies. And so the parents and the younger daughter walk away, but the older one is still just watching. So I walked out and just handed her a cookie because she's just sort of fascinated, right? So I give her a cookie, and then the mom comes back 10 minutes later and is like, can I buy 75 of those?
Holy
moly. Like, what? Okay. So I'm like, oh, you know, like, how do I, okay, I have to package these up for her. And like, you know, it's so different 3 years ago than now, but like very quickly, how do I package up 75 cookies for her? And yeah, that was pretty cool. So yeah, we would get that. We'd get people that would randomly kind of watch through the window. The one big thing is people sort of assume when I say I bake at East End that I have a storefront at East End, which we do not have a storefront. So that while they're sold at East End, we don't have our own store. So sometimes it's sort of educating people on the fact that it's not just the stores at East End, but there's this whole other community there that exists to help small food entrepreneurs like start and grow their business, and that we're hiding in the back.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. So that was a good day. You sold 75 cookies to one customer.
Mm-hmm.
What were you pretty excited when that happened?
I was very excited. That was pretty cool. That was the biggest order I'd had. So,
way to go. Way to go. So you're making cookies. You're in airports. You're in retails across the United States. You're building and growing. Mm-hmm. What's next for you and your adventures with Hazelic Cookies?
So one of the things that's been happening that we just love is, for anyone that's familiar with promotional goods, something that's, it's one of those things that I think in a way is, it wasn't something we planned for, but it's naturally been happening. And so with our cookies, because the store bottles are individually wrapped, they have our logo on the front. But instead of our logo, we can put anyone's logo. So one of the very first orders we did was for a wedding, where everything was packaged, so they would be the favors of the wedding. And since then, we've gotten calls without necessarily promoting it too much. We get calls from large companies or for, you know, for weddings as well, but a lot of large companies that will say, hey, we're going to this particular conference. Or we had someone last year that was coming to Orange County Convention Center for a huge IT conference last year and said, hey, could you stand in our booth and make cookies for 2 days? So we stood in their booth and they made cookies for 2 days. But it's doing some live events, but a lot of it is about wrapping these cookies for, you know, you have a business and you go around and you see clients and you want to give them something, or you go to a big conference and everybody has tchotchkes they give out, right? Pens or fidget spinners, whatever it is. Well, why not give them food? Why not give them cookies, right? So the cookie gets individually wrapped. It has your logo or whatever it is you want on the front of the cookie, and you can hand these out to people, right? So we've done that as well as gift baskets. So it's doing that promotional goods and doing those gift baskets. That's a direction that we're really excited about and something that we're starting to pursue.
That's awesome. And they're really, for people out there listening, I want you to imagine, like, looking, I'm going to try to describe this, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, right? But it's a really thin, so they're individually wrapped. You open this beautiful box, and inside there's stacks of different color cookies and different flavors. And they're really, really thin. They're not crunchy or crispy. They're actually chewy, and they're very dense. They look a little bit like a waffle, and they're really thin, and they have great flavors, and there's flavors in it. So I hope you guys listening in, I hope your mouths are watering, because these cookies are good, and they give you energy, you know, because a lot of cyclists use this, runners use this, and I'm in the fitness space, so, like, I love cookies. That's why I exercise, but I wanted you guys to, like, hear what that sounds like. So Cassandra, tell us about the flavors, why everyone's mouths are salivating.
So for the Stroopwafels, what we call our original and what's the very traditional Dutch profile is a little cinnamon in the waffle. And so the waffle's baked in a 6-millimeter iron, split in half, and then filled with caramel. And so the caramel also has just a little bit of cinnamon in it as well. And that's the traditional. And we do a gluten-free version and a vegan version of that. And then from there, we have some different flavors. So we have a maple, which is a maple caramel, so it's a little sweeter than the original. We have a peanut butter, which is a peanut butter waffle with a peanut butter caramel. And it's actually called David's Peanut Butter after our friend's son, who said to us, why don't you have peanut butter? And so we do. There is a cocoa spelt, which is a really dark, earthy chocolate waffle with spelt flour and cocoa. It's not very sweet, with caramel in the middle. And then we also just launched a brand new flavor, which is key lime, and it tastes like key lime pie. And I'm super excited about this because we did it at Science of Wine last week and it was very well received. And as we're going around handing out samples to people to get feedback, the feedback has been incredibly positive. So the waffle is actually a little bit crisper on this. The texture is quite a bit different than our normal waffle. Like, there's oat in it and wheat bran, so you really get that texture like you would with graham, but with this key lime caramel. So that one will be on our website today. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, now I'm probably going to go taste test some cookies for the next year, do some research, cookie research. So while we're all thinking about cookies, where could we go to find more about you, Cassandra, and more about the cookies, and how could people out there in the community who's looking to get into cooking, or maybe that's into have their products in retail and they just want to connect with other people like you, how can people find you and your cookies?
The easiest way is on our website. So it's zellicookies.com, G-E-Z-E-L-L-I-G-C-O-O-K-I-E-S, cookies. That's the easiest way. There's information about us. There's a link to send me an email and say, hey, here's what I want to know. And you can also just order right online as well. So that's awesome. The easiest way to find it.
You'll ship it straight to their house or their office?
Yeah, and if you're close by, we'll just drive it over.
Yeah, And they have a cool car. It's wrapped. It's a Mini Cooper, and it's wrapped, and it says Hazelic Cookies on the side, so it's really cool. And it's great seeing them around Orlando. So great. So if people want to find you, they could go to that website. And for those listening in, you can look in the show notes. I'll include the links for the website, so you guys don't have to try to write it down if you're driving. And you know, just click on that. It'll go to the website, and you can, you know, click to contact Cassandra and order some cookies and order me one too while you're at it. And yeah, make sure you guys connect. And if you guys are in Orlando and you'd like to check out the space or just connect with her during the, where are you guys, where do you guys cook? What is the name?
At East End Market. East End Market. Mm-hmm. It's on Corinne Drive in Orlando.
Awesome. Maybe we'll do a field trip there one day and stand in the window and order 75 cookies. So, Cassandra, is there anything that you'd like to talk about that maybe I missed or give anybody a shout out?
You know, one thing I would say is something I've loved about doing this here is the community in Orlando is awesome. And I would say this to anyone thinking about starting a food business is I have met coming not from this industry. So many people are willing to share information or like give really helpful advice or save you some agony. And I would say like, go out there and assume everyone's on your team, right? Like even people that maybe don't give you the best feedback, most people I've met are not afraid to share what they know. And it's been really great because it saved us some agony. And then hopefully I've done the same for other people too by sharing like, hey, you need a NutriPanel? Here's how you can get a NutriPanel, right? Or you want to do this? Here's what I've learned and here's what I know. Or try this vendor's really great or talk to this person. So, I mean, there is... there's just such a good community here. There's actually so many people that I could mention that have just been absolutely fantastic. East End also does a whole entrepreneur series in the spring where you can go and sign up and learn a bit about how to launch a product, and you can taste test your product as well with people there to get some initial feedback from people that are not your friends and relatives. So yeah, I would say the big thing, one of the big things that I've loved about it here is how many people are willing to like just give me their time or introduce me to people or, you know, just help keep me from doing some stupid things, right? By pointing me in the right direction on something. So that's probably one thing I would throw out there that's been really great. And, you know, starting your own business can be a little nerve-wracking sometimes. So just feeling like there's a lot of people out there that are happy to help, that want to help you succeed, is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, this is our home. This is Orlando's the place where we live and where we're building and growing. So I really appreciate that input and advice, and I would love to learn how to make money while eating. So if we can figure that out, that'd be awesome. Cassandra, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your experience and just really diving in and talking to us about cookies and about your story and all the adventures that you and your family have had. This is actually wonderful. I think Oma would be extremely proud of you and your cookies. Do you think she would like your cookies?
Yes, I think she would like my cookies. I'm pretty sure Oma would like my cookies, especially the Speculoos.
Okay, good. Well, thanks for coming on the show. We had an blast, you know, interviewing you and hearing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, listening in with your mouth watering, thinking about cookies, you could find her cookies at Ancient Olives in Winter Park, and there's three other stores. You could find it in Terminal A in the airport, and there's a few other places, and then you could also find it on her website, which you can find that in the show notes. But thanks for listening in. Go try these cookies. You have my word that they're amazing. My favorite is the cocoa one, the one that is dark and has chocolate. I love chocolate. So I'm going to probably go have one. But thanks, guys, for listening into the show. We will talk with you on the next episode. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.